Well, good day and welcome to another episode here of the Disaster Podcast. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic, and we are back with our first episode actually recorded in the new year. We had some episodes we were carrying over from the holiday time, but we're back. It's 2019 officially now for the Disaster Podcast team. And, you know, I've been doing some traveling and holiday time, but I know that Sam Bradley has been over there in Colorado holding down the fort. How are things going, Sam?
Yeah, well, I did my best to make you feel guilty while you were enjoying your vacation. I'm not sure that it worked, though. And we got our Dr. Joe Holly back. I guess he took some downtime, eh, Joe?
I had a little bit of downtime for sure. I had a nice travel and that sort of stuff, so all good.
Very good. Well, Kyle Nelson, our meteorologist, might be popping in a bit, so we'll try to catch up with him when he comes up. But in the meantime, we have one of our good friends that we've interviewed a number of times on a number of topics, Mike Marsh, who's now the Director of Operations for Paramedics Plus in Alameda County, my old stomping grounds. We were just sitting there boring everybody else with what's going on. I kind of want to backstep on this, Mike, a little bit before we talk about the specifics, but how did this, I mean, we talked about AMR setup and some of the other people in the area, but how did Paramedics Plus get their response process set up? And when did that happen? Because obviously you just don't, you know, get a phone call and send a bunch of people. So how did that work?
We just got a phone call and we sent a bunch of people. No, I
thank you very much.
I think thank you for having me back. It was the campfires and North Bay fires and stuff like that. I wish I could take credit for it because it'd be really cool to put on my resume. But I really have to kind of tip my hat to Kelly Coleman, who is the Regional Disaster Medical Health Coordinator, RDMHS. For Region 2, and ever since Asiana and some of the larger fires that have been occurring, we really finally got some really awesome key stakeholder people together to kind of format and develop an overhead support team or an incident management team or whatever you want to call it, a mission support team. When you get into the ICS things, and that's some of the things that we were tripping over, and some of those stakeholders were just kept showing up at these massive disasters and conflagrations and fires, and we found out that there is this very unique period of time between the initial attack and the incident management team being dropped in on these operations from Cal Fire or larger cities that would come in, and the medical mutual aid system was just so foreign to the fire service, especially in Northern California, where it's predominantly provided by private providers within a 911 contract. And so the short answer is that over the last 5 years, Kelly, myself, Jason Bond from AMR, Mike Cabano, Jason Weed from Santa Clara, so many of these stakeholders, at Contra Costa, AMR, we developed the plan. And what we did was we based that plan off of the ambulance strike team leader model. And from that, we policy crept it into an area unbeknownst to us. We were just doing it. We were keeping it within the 701 ordering system, but we were really kind of looking at a way, how do we help that first EMS supervisor with a no-notice conflagration or a pre-planned special event? And in that period of time, we found out that an agency rep to the RDMHS through the region really were the boots on the ground saying, hey, we can deconflict all of these orders in the ESF-8 functionality in the med health branch, which is not the fire branch, and help make sure that we have accountability. And to Sam, to ask you the answer, kind of like the initial point is, we were not personally showing accountability for the resources that were being ordered into these huge conflagrations. And the incident commander, the ops section chief of the fire, had no idea that we had 14 ambulance strike teams rolling up to Santa Rosa to offload evacuations because they're dealing with the suppression side. So it really started from a safety point of view.
Yeah, that makes sense. And, you know, Contra Costa and Alameda in California, if I didn't mention that, have always been good about working together. And Kelly's a stand-up guy. So I can see you guys all working together, and that's pretty awesome. And God knows California needs it. They need all the help they can get. It just seems every year the fires get worse, and it couldn't be as bad as last year. Well, it is, and God forbid what next year is going to hold. But when you put your disaster team, if you will, together, I imagine there's pre-planning that goes into that. Do you select people by application? Do they have they pre had some pre-event training and that kind of thing?
So a lot of the, especially out of Alameda County, we always come up with what's called an X-ray team, which is a combination of ALS and BLS providers. So we use our network provider, BLS ambulance companies, and of course our P plus ambulances that are out there. The way that we offer this out is that, you know, there are people that go to places that still make ice for their cocktails. And then there are people that go to places that can use portable restrooms and sit and eat MREs. They kind of define themselves by the mission set. And so when we put out there, hey, we have an immediate need, medical mutual aid response to the campfires, we get, hey, I want to go, but I got to be back by 6 o'clock to feed my dog. Yeah, that's not going to really work out. Or, hey, I can go, but I've got, you know, I got a flight that's in 4 days. I can't guarantee you're going to get back, right? So we started with that type of approach. And then from there, we took a model that from another provider that I used to work with, that it was like, hey, let's invest into these people. Let's teach them how to talk ICS. Let's teach them situational awareness. Let's teach them laces and lookouts and all of the fire watches and stuff like that. Let's provide training with them. And then from there, let's show them standardized equipment. And then we get them on a list, and they know that when they need to deploy, that they'll be ready to go. One of the other ways that we did it, too, was that every disaster that we have, we always take a California state-provided disaster medical supply unit, otherwise known as a DEMSU. That is a very specialized vehicle with equipment on it, and that training usually is tailored to medical mutual aid, ICS, casualty collection, MCIs type of stuff. And so from there, kind of like an organic, I don't want to say sound too California, too California, but it, organically, brother, it just kind of grows, man. And it just kind of becomes a group of folks that want to know and better themselves. And then from there, we then took a stab at making policy which supported the operations instead of, you know, policy dictating what we may or may not think how operations might go. So from there, we just kind of grow the team, and then we train them. We teach them how to drive. We show them long hours. We make sure that they don't have any discipline issues, you know, in the file that are going to become management issues under, you know, stress inoculation or austere care. Someone that's very good on their feet when it comes to having to adapt and overcome. You know, also, I know this is going to come funny to us on the phone, but one of the big things that we found out on the North Bay fires, you got to know how to read a map, right? Instead
of
having
an
iPhone. So, you know, I don't know that, but there's a rescue captain by the name of Rescue Captain Choker out of San Francisco Fire Department, and he and I were on the North Bay fires. And when all of the when we went cell phone dead because there was a blackout from all power and cell phones were down, a group of us older folks, seasoned, ran down to the AAA store, and they found a AAA outlet, believe it or not, and they got all the topo maps and the folding maps. We literally had to teach some of our newer generation staff how to put a finger on B and a finger on 3 and intersect that's where that address is. I've never realized how far generationally we have gotten away from area orientation and map reading.
Yeah, it's funny. I was thinking about that the other day. I wonder if they even still made Thomas guides, but it's an art.
Well,
you know,
they don't.
Oh my God. That's scary. Well, I'm thinking,
I'm curious what Joe has to say about that. Do you guys go over map reading with your guys in Memphis?
I was going to say that Joe feeds his dog, but he also eats MREs, so it's all good. Go ahead, Joe.
Yeah, so we do actually go over, you know, basic GPS and map reading and that sort of stuff, knowing that, you know, the fancy electronics are really great, but if the system's down, the system's down, and they're, you know, you're back to a pencil and piece of paper. But as I was listening to that, it did make me wonder that, you know, as you look at the next time, will you change the qualifications of the people that you would be willing to send out the door? Will you require something different of them?
I think it's a living and breathing functionality. I mean, the qualifications that I wish to hold are, of course, all the ICS, you know, online stuff, a good 300 and 400 class, an ASTL program that goes with it, and then continual training that happens on a monthly basis. And we have a preset, or we're attempting to launch a preset training curriculum where we're going to have things like map reading, how to make an MRE. How to set up the portable toilet with the chemical disposal packets, right? These are things that you just don't learn in the Mosby and Brady book anymore, right? And so how to hook up a mass oxygenation tree, you know, austere care. You've got one ambulance and a gym full of people that are evacuation because they're, you know, Joplin for the tornadoes and whatnot. And there's a lot of thinking that has to go through there. And so one of the things that I had never thought of doing before, the campfire that became blatantly up in my face, was CISM. I need people in my management team and in my overhead support team to be able, through either the demote process or just in time, to be able to sit there and talk to people about the horrific injuries that we saw, the horrific experiences that they interfaced with, the fact that their ambulance burned over, the fact that their infrastructure had collapsed, and everything that they've known is now gone, and some, you know, jackhat from Alameda County's barking orders and helping them try to get together. Yeah, I'm talking a common ICS language that we all can learn, and disaster response is a unique skill set. But what about the guys that were there for the first 12 hours that haven't been pulled offline because the fire is moving 8 football fields in a second? I mean, there's a lot of things that, you know, I'm going to now add a CISM component to my team because I need someone there. Heck, I may need someone for myself. So, yes, Joe, to your point, I think that it is learning and it is growing, and that and if we can create a curriculum that will encapsulate and capture what we've learned over all these disasters, that's a big one. You know, another one we're going to add is a safety officer to the NAEMT program. Hopefully we're going to get a safety officer qualification that we can go out there. We were handing law enforcement officers fire shelters as they were doing evacuations, yet the EMS folks were handed them, and we had no idea how to get into a shake and bake, right? I mean, there's a lot of things that, you know, we're being thrusted like the active shooters of the world. If you would have told me 10 years ago, hey, Marsh, you're going to be wearing body armor and a helmet with ballistic protection, and you're going to be going into an RTF format, into an active shooter, I would have said you're smoking crack. Which is, you know, not legal, but marijuana is. But that's okay. I'm not going to get off on a tangent. But that's kind of things that, you know, I don't know how you grab that except looking back through the after action report process and grabbing those nuggets to make your team stronger and empowering them to lead.
Well, you know, I'm totally behind your CISM effort, and I'm thinking, too, about employees that may be well-intended but have never been in a disaster setting, and that can be, you know, quite an issue right there. So I'm glad that you're looking at that. I'm thinking, too, what Joe may be thinking, what do you do in terms of medical control on these, you know, they're out of your area specifically?
So we stand with the, if it's in the state of California, we go off of the sending county protocol. So whatever the sending county's policy and procedure for pre-hospital care, that's the stuff we use, right? So we're not going to try to, we're not going to push, fentanyl just because fentanyl's used in for pain control in the receiving county if we're using morphine in the sending county. So we use our scope of practice based off of that. We're pretty fortunate that the whole disrupted protocol or the, you know, disrupted communication or the standing orders versus, you know, requesting orders, we're not in the county that has that anymore. We have a really awesome medical director, county medical director, Dr. Sporer, that allows clinicians to be clinicians. The other nice thing that has happened in Title 22, and at least in the state of California, is the EMT basic scope of practice has really changed, where I can use EMTs now in a much bigger depth with their pulse oximetry, blood glucose monitoring, Narcan administration, respiratory issues, you know, combi tubes, all that kind of stuff. Combi tubes, I just showed my age, King tubes and stuff like that. There's different things that we can utilize them on. So my skill set of clinician that I bring to an operation, I can be so diverse in how I apply that, whether it's going to be a standalone, casualty collection spot for evacuation, for evacuation center, whether it's going to be interfacing with the fire line medics and EMTs, whether it's going to be a hospital evacuation, or we're just backing up a 911 system. That kind of protocol helps transport across county lines. And we're pretty standard up and down California, and they've done a great work in that. If it's outside of the California, that national registry type of approach goes to it. With the other provider and their national ground ambulance contract, they could speak better onto that. But it's usually whoever is sending you, that's the scope of practice that you work under.
Well, there's also rotating tourniquets, but we won't go there. Speaking of old medics, Jamie, you have any questions or thoughts?
Yeah, I was thinking, I caught that combi tube reference, and, I'm right there with you, Mike. It's interesting to hear, you know, the steps you went through, and we talk a lot about training and you know, the bringing somebody with the actual experience in to share what happened the last time. And as Sam mentioned, these fires seem to be coming more and more frequently. They seem to get larger and larger. What effort have you put towards getting ready for next season? Are you bringing people in to say, all right, this is what we ran into, and this is what you might need to be prepared to do? As you talked a little bit about, you know, the safety officer needing to use the fire shelters, things like that.
One of the things that we've done, and just blessing by promotion, Kelly took a program manager's position in the state of California, EMSA. We have a new RDMHS, Regional Disaster Medical Health Supervisor for Region 2, who is fully behind this process. We got people like Jim Morrissey that are MOOCs, you know, the medical area officer. I just jacked that up, but we can get a definition later. But the MOOC for the operational area that send these people, we're finally getting to the point where we recognize that we have county lines, but when it comes to the point where we need help, people are looking together this in a collaborative and synergistic look at it. I'm going to tell you, for those of you that know this or those of you that don't know California, when you have agencies like San Francisco Fire Department, EMS Division, coming to the table and saying, hey, we want to be a part of this. We want to start sending mutual aid out. We want to start helping because we've asked for it so many times. You have this really collaborative team that is working together. I'm happy to say that, to your point, Jamie, on the 23rd of this month, we have a multi-county representatives coming from multiple counties that are going to sit down and we're going to look at the ASTL program. We're going to develop standards for an overhead support team. We're going to make sure it's in line with ICS. And from there, we're going to take the lessons that we've learned over the prior deployments. We're going to make a program that is going to be sustainable. And, you know, I've said this many times. I've just happened to be in the wrong place at the right time when all these disasters have happened to me. I don't have a doctor degree or some emergency manager's degree. I work with a team, and we work together to learn, and then we make a program that when I leave or die or something like that happens to me or I have a stroke, that the program will continue and we will encapsulate and encompass all of the stuff that we've learned. And it doesn't matter what patch we work. It really focuses right back on the bare roots of response mitigation and patient care. And I think that that's why training organizations like yourself and everyone else, right, that we need to go back to where we were, right? It's about the patient. It's about not taking a step in the point of, hey, this is my sword and I'm gonna, or my flag and I'm going to wave because I'm the biggest, you know, Barney badass that's there. That's not what we want to do. We want to say, hey, Chico, Paramedic Rescue or Enlo Health or Butte County EMS or whatever it is, I'm calling for Broken Arrow. I need help right now. And we get there and we say, how can we support you not take this over? And let me take some stuff off your plate because you're the subject matter expert of your area and your operational area. So to that point, we're gonna get together and we're gonna start really pounding out a training program in California.
That's awesome, and I'd like to hear more about that as it grows. But you know, along a related line here, one of the things you mentioned about the Paradise Fire was you went into a lot of damage, lack of communication, and lack of organization, and you had to take a pretty key role in trying to get things organized. Do you want to talk about that a bit?
Sure. So we all the Ricky Rescues of the world, my hat's off to everyone. We all have the scanner app. We all set it to how many users listen, because we know that when something goes off, everyone starts listening, and then that sends up a little alert. Well, you know, about 7 o'clock to 8 o'clock in the morning, the scanner apps go off if something's going off up in Butte County. And during that time, we're listening to the radio of hospitals being evacuations, crews being overrun. We heard, you know, law enforcement officers screaming on the radio for help. And we started making phone calls very quickly. Hey, are you ready to go? Hey, are you ready to go? Who's offline? Who's online? How can we get things together? How can we get up there within, you know, the SIMS NIMS program of making sure that the resource ordering is done the correct way? And then when we got the call, we were already standing up. We all took efforts within our operational area to lean far forward very, very, very heavily so that when the order came in, we were already putting the gear shifter in drive and driving up there. Assistant Chief Mickey Hoover, who was up there for Butte County EMS, was the official requester of our team. I had two conversations with them, which was, I need help. I don't know when I'm going to see you. And here's where I know that I think I'm going to be at that point in time. We started heading up there. Communications were spotty. I went to the location. I checked in with the regional dispatch to make sure that everything was okay. We led the overhead team into Butte College campus in Orville, where we met up with a lot of allied agencies from the EMS side that that were doing their just an amazing job for the resources that they had at that point in time. But our overhead team quickly identified who the leadership was there. We got an intel dump with them very quickly, and we set up a forward operating base until we could get a hold of leadership, and we just continued to support the firefighters. We were having victims dropped off to us by law enforcement, by firefighters. It was tragic. It was tragic. I still get a little misty when I say this, but there were many very significantly burned, maimed victims dropped off to us that we had to deal with. There were double digit, you know, sorties going out of a football field with burn victims that were going out of there. We had missing kids. We had a lot. The infrastructure was barely holding on, but we just attacked it in a task ordering way of doing it. We supported each crew. We had to do some really spot on situational awareness to find out who had the 10,000 foot stare and was really out of the game, that hadn't been involved in the initial attack. And we kind of said, hey, we need some help counting band-aids over here. Can you help me with this? We had to keep people engaged. We had to keep personal accountability. And we had to fuse outside resources coming in at a very quick pace into a 911 system that was really, really overloaded. And fire was doing just suppression and life safety, and medical was doing evacuations and landing zone operations with helicopters and trying to track it all, working with a local EMS agency and getting, you know, John Poland was up there. Helping me get information out to the crews, and we just became a real big conduit of communication to everyone. And then we just kind of tried to literally throw boxes and lines at it so that we could have an ICS structured system. But I it wasn't for probably 12 to 18 hours before I saw the assistant chief come to me, and I literally just gave him a hug, and he gave me a hug and said, just thank you. Thank you for taking this over so I could focus on my crews and my ambulance stations that were burned out, the hospital, the Feather River Hospital that was burned over. So did that answer your question? Sorry, it's probably a lot more.
No, it's actually quite fascinating. And Jamie's making a side note on how impressive that is, and I totally agree with that. Jamie, you had a question for Joe, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm listening to Mike talk about being that forward-leaning position, which is exciting to hear. But I don't think there's a mechanism other than something like, you know, our scanner apps in the system itself to pre-alert, you know, so that people are standing up ready to go, to my knowledge. And what's your thoughts on that?
Well, I think you're exactly right. I'm not aware of, any sort of personal pre-alert system. I think you have to be careful with those, because in many times folks interpret that meaning I need to respond, and so they self-dispatch. And, we've talked about that a lot before where it's problematic. These guys obviously are very well organized and very well disciplined, and so they know not to do that. And so, as early a heads up as they can get, obviously the more prepared and ready to go they are when they do actually get deployed. But I don't know that there's any particular thing out there other than messaging apps and that sort of stuff that a prearranged group might be on, like WhatsApp or GroupMe or some of those, where they could get some kind of alert that told them something was going on.
Yeah, that makes sense. Mike, was your experience at the campfire different than the Paradise Fire? Good, bad, or indifferent? Or were there different challenges?
So the campfire was the Paradise Fire. The city of Paradise was completely overrun by the campfire. I think my situational differences between the North Bay fires of Santa Rosa and Napa to this campfire was I would have to say the major difference was I was not prepared. I want to say this. I'm sorry, and you're going to have to most likely edit this. There was the infrastructure that we walked into was different than the infrastructure we walked into the Bay Area, right? I mean, if you think about it for a second, right, Region 2 has a lot of, you know, resources and assets. And the reason we have this is because we have a huge call volume, you know, that is out there. You know, someone goes, well, they've got 70 ambulances. Yeah, it's because we're using them, right? It's not because they're just sitting around having tea and crumpets. but they're actually being resourced and used. When you go to Region 3, right, up there in Butte County, you try to pull together one strike team, you may decimate operational areas by just pulling one ambulance. So when you're going in there in this big battle rattle, getting ready, heavy format strike team with a safety officer and a strike team leader and a DEMSU and five ALS ambulances and leader cars, and they're coming in there and there's, you know, theme music behind you and the capes are going, right? You're like, you're rolling into a county that's kind of like, we've never dealt with this. We don't know how to receive you. We don't know how to house you. We don't know how to communicate to you. And we sure as crap don't know what to do with you, but we know we need you. And so you really got to have that real rich flavor of education of like, you know, you could go really wrong really quickly by stomping on someone's face saying, well, in the ICS manual, page 15, subsection 2 in the 400B, right, I'm supposed to be this, and therefore thou shalt give me delegation of authority. You're like, dude, I am talking to a street medic, right? That is that knows the person who just burned over and died in the car that they're responding to. You know, so it's a real interesting Rosetta Stone moment to blend that language of I'm here to help. I can take it over. I'm getting delegation of authority. I can lead you, but I can also lead you astray. You got to be super sensitive about that.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. Yeah, very salient point. As we wind up here, Mike, can you think of three? Now, I'm sure there's more than that, but three basic points that are lessons learned from last fire season. And I think you kind of touched on some of the changes you mentioned to Joe, but can you come up with a couple?
Yeah, I would say the first and foremost is you got to stay in your lane. You got to stay in your lane. You know, I mean, when you got there's a reason why ESF 8 is different than the fire rescue branch, right? There's a med health component, which is a much grander, with long tentacles for evac and skilled nursing facilities and special needs and stuff like that, that EMS tromps all over, right? Trying to evacuate them and move them and continue in continuity of care, is staying in your lane. The thing is, and I love what Joe said, is you got to be really careful with these scanner apps. That is not a declaration of response. That is a situational status update. You've got to have a person in that operational area with ground pounder knowledge and area orientation to help you so that you don't get stuck down a burnover situation and add literally more casualties to that environment. You got to really, really, I'll tell you, you've got to really be a strong leader. And that's not an autocratic way. That's got to be a team atmosphere. If you go in an autocratic way and try to take over that situation and downplay the team that you're coming with or the team that you're there to support, right, as anything other than equals, and that we are all there to adapt and come up with a problem-solving mechanism to mitigate this conflagration, you will one, be eaten alive by your own people, and two, you won't get anything done because you're too worried about yourself and not about the team and worrying about the patient care. So those three takeaways would be my biggest claim to fame or my biggest takeaways is stay in your lane, single point resource ordering, have someone there that knows where they're doing, and don't be an autocratic dorkhead. And that's a technical.
I love your terms. So, Jamie, I swear that there's so much information Mike is imparting and so many good points that, you know, they wouldn't have understood if they hadn't gone in there and experienced it. It's always about good education, and I hope our listeners that might be in this type of situation listen to what Mike had to say, because he made some very good points. Semper Gumby, as we say.
Absolutely. And, you know, and I mentioned this earlier, we talk about this all the time. Anyone who listens to this show knows that we're education focused. We're forward thinking in that regard. It's one of the reasons we associate with Paragon Medical Education Group and Joe and Jim and the rest of the team, because they think that way. You know, I'm sure Joe was, you know, sitting there nodding along as Mike was going through all the things they did, because it sounds like Mike was setting up a training evolution that I've heard things that you and Jim have done, Joe.
Oh, I think you're exactly right. It's absolutely a training evolution. That's a beautiful description, and that's exactly what you have to do with it. You got to treat it like the real McCoy every time.
So if folks want to kind of set something like this up, you know, you make use of your experience and the experience of all the educators you bring in for specific customized experiences, where can they reach out to you and really have that custom phone call where they actually get to talk to somebody and say, this is what I'm worried about happening in my area. What can you do to help us prepare for it?
Well, you can find us on the web at ParagonMedicalGroup.com, as well as Facebook under same name. And you can always reach us through the Disaster Podcast.
Great. And I hope people take advantage of that. I mean, it's just a phone call. You know, it's just an opportunity to reach out and find out what can be done, because I don't think people really appreciate, you know, until they're in a situation like some of the things Mike described, which God forbid, you know, we don't have happen too frequently. But, you know, until you're in that situation, you don't realize how much you could have used that little bit of extra special training every now and then to keep your people online and sharp. So, you know, thanks for continuing to support the show here, Joe. Mike, you know, I know you're busy and got a lot going on, but, you know, somebody's listening to this and maybe talking about how they can better improve their preparedness. Is there a way some of our listeners can reach out to you? Are you active on our Facebook group maybe, and we can have them reach out to you there?
You know, unfortunately, I'm not a facey snap
Understood.
Whatever you call them.
No, that's all good. No, is there a way they can reach you, though, if they wanted to just kind of say,
yeah,
you know, hey, this is what we're thinking of doing. How's it sound?
Yeah, I think it's great. I provide my email address and cell phone number to Sam or yourself, and you can post it on the Disaster Podcast. I think that'd probably be the easiest way.
All right, well, why don't we go ahead and do that? So we'll get your email address. That's probably the best way folks can reach out to you, so your phone's not ringing off the hook. But thanks a lot, Mike. This has been fantastic.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure. Remember, we're nothing unless we have a team behind us.
Absolutely.
Well said. 100%.
And, you know, we're a team here. I mean, you know, Sam, we didn't get Kyle on tonight, but there's a lot of weather stuff going on. We'll probably talk to him about that next week. But, you know, this is a team effort, and I certainly couldn't do it without you. So where can folks find you if they want to check in with you somewhere?
Well, you can find me in the usual social media places under Sam Bradley or Sam Bradley 11. And I am not a Snapchat, but a social media kind of person. Certainly on our Disaster Podcast Facebook page and on the disasterpodcast.com website. How about you, Jimmy?
Well, I'm under the handle PodMedic in most social media locations, so friend, follow, or otherwise catch up with me in those places. And, you know, definitely follow us here at the disasterpodcast.com site and over at our Facebook group. Just search for Disaster Podcast, ask to join the group, and we'll bring you right in. We're heading towards 700 strong, and that's exciting. It's a lot of activity when we've got things going on, especially when there's active situations going on around the country. People share a lot of articles and pose a lot of questions and suppose this happened kind of things, and we get a lot of response from our collection of experts that listen to the show. I mean, this is a show of experts, for experts, by experts, or at least we try to be. And I think that that's what makes the Disaster Podcast special. So keep that contact and that community coming. Sam, you know, we've had Mike on before, but it's always a treat, and we've always got a lot that we learn from, you know, his input.
That's right, and I'm sure we'll be talking to him in the future. But, you know, if anything was an example of disaster medicine, it's this conversation. So disaster medicine is not our everyday medicine.